This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club. We've had a couple of weeks off, but we're back and we're feeling fresh. This is your one-stop shop for football betting insight. Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon to guide you through proceedings today. Mark, I hope there's a spring in your step after your warm weather break.
Yeah, absolutely. It was it was good to get away to Tenerife, and we do apologise. There were quite a few people messaging me, you, Racing Post Sport, wanting to know where the podcast has gone. I did feel slightly better by the fact that one of my favourite podcasts also went on holiday at almost roughly the same time. Parenting Hell with Beckett and Widdicombe, that went off to at a week off, partly due to technical issues, partly I think as well Josh had a few sort of personal problems. So we're in good company to take unscheduled breaks, but I blame the school government rules where you're not allowed to take your kids out these days, are you? I mean, it was never a problem in my day, but I had to wait until everyone was able to go away, which unfortunately clashed with the football season. But we're back and should be able to sort of be full steam ahead now for Premier League, Champions League, World Cup, the lot.
Absolutely. I thought you were going to say then, Mark, that you'd sort of gone on a podcast retreat with Josh Widdicombe or something.
Blimey, I think I'd rather go with Beckett, to be honest. He was in Orlando, and there were worse places to be.
Let's have a quick look back at some of the action we've missed then, including the Premier League midweek action. And Mark, we have to start with Erling Haaland. I mean, the first episode, I think, back for this season that we recorded, we were, I wouldn't say dubious about how Erling Haaland would start life in the Premier League, but I think we were conservative with our predictions, and he has blown everything out of the water in the first few games. Back-to-back Premier League hat-tricks.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I always think it's better to be on the sort of more cautious side of these things, because more often than not, I think it's the sensible approach. And I think there have been times you could argue that, City have not had the kind of control that they would always like. You know, you think of that Newcastle game particularly. It was absolutely chaotic, wasn't it? That match, and that probably would have angered Pep Guardiola to some extent, but where we are seeing Haaland sort of make a massive difference is just the, in the penalty box, back-to-back hat-tricks. You know, won the game against Crystal Palace, destroyed Nottingham Forest, the best start any striker has ever made or any player has ever made to the start of a Premier League season. So it's been a fantastic opening sort of salvo from Haaland. I mean, he will score goals. There's no doubt he'll score goals. My question mark was just over whether he would settle into the way that Pep wants his teams to play. I think at the moment, I don't think it really matters. He's just a battering ram, isn't he? And, lethal in front of goal. I'm a little bit surprised that he played against Forest because obviously they've got, on paper, a harder game away at Aston Villa and then Champions League on Tuesday. But they used to call it Pep Roulette, didn't they? And you weren't sure which players were going to start for Manchester City. And that was another reason why I was sort of against him sort of in the golden boot. I wasn't sure whether Guardiola would trust his hamstrings because, Haaland's had some injury problems already in his time, particularly at Borussia Dortmund. But I think at the moment, at least, he wants him to play every game to kind of get used to the way that Manchester City play and to sort of get him fully adapted, and there's no doubt that he's done that. I am just going to put a shout out as well. I mean, Haaland is obviously grabbing all of the Man City headlines, but what about Julian Alvarez as well? I mean,
really impressive. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, he's somebody that I think will benefit from Haaland kind of grabbing all of the headlines, because he looks, in the sort of the little minutes that we've seen from him so far, I mean, he's somebody I think that could have a really big future alongside Haaland. So you could argue that Pep Guardiola knows what he's doing, Jack. I mean, I don't know if that's ever been said before.
Who would have thought? Hey?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that the Haaland sort of game time. I know it's a really big debate amongst the fantasy football community, which seems to be growing every single year. Do you think there's kind of a pattern that we can follow to work out when Haaland starts, or is it very much just up to Pep?
No, I think it is up to Pep, and sort of guessing what he's going to do in those situations, really not easy. I think he's one of the harder managers to read. Like I say, I felt the perfect time really was a midweek home game against Nottingham Forest. That felt to me like the right time. But there just will be, rotation from everybody. There has to be. The Champions League or the European teams are playing every Saturday and midweek now until the World Cup. So there will be rotation. I think it's a difficult one to work out. Maybe it's the Champions League games where he feels like he wants to control sort of midfield a little bit more. I think that's where you'd be looking for when Haaland's maybe not going to play, is when Pep really feels like he needs that extra sort of midfielder almost, when De Bruyne plays up front, or you've seen Bernardo go up there or something like that. So I think it's in games like that where you'll feel like Haaland will maybe take a little breather. But what a sort of start from him. He looks fully up to speed already. Doesn't have that many touches, but doesn't need them.
Absolutely. Superb start for Haaland, and also a superb start for Arsenal, who are 100% still in the Premier League, the only team at this point to remain with 100% record. They look really good, Mark.
They do, yeah. I mean, fireworks on and off the pitch. I don't know if you saw that. just a little dig back at those that felt they over-celebrated against Fulham. I mean, I think the Aston Villa 2-1 was much more impressive than in terms of performance than the Fulham 2-1. Some people are suggesting it's been an easy start. And I mean, I think you could say that it has been. Leicester not in great shape. Aston Villa not in great shape. Newly promoted Fulham. Newly promoted Bournemouth. But you still got to beat them. And they've done that. They also went away to Crystal Palace on the opening night and played really well. So I think it has been a very positive start from Arsenal. The question marks over them come, how do they deal with setbacks? Now, they've responded well in terms of Fulham went in front, Aston Villa got an equaliser. Even when Leicester got sort of back at them a couple of times, they responded really well. But you'd like to, I suppose, see it in a tougher test, how they respond to setbacks. Because last season, when they missed out on the Champions League, it felt like that Tottenham result really rolled into the Newcastle performance for them, and they were unable to respond. This looks like a stronger team. Saliba at the back, Gabriel Jesus up front. Another year working in terms of what Arteta wants from them. I would caveat, we did a feature at the start of the season, Simon Giles in the Racing Post, and it was highlighted then that Arsenal had the easiest sort of start. But you have still got to do the wins, and they've done that. Squad depth could be an issue later on down the line. I think the drop-off from sort of Jesus to Nketiah is pretty large and maybe unsustainable in terms of, if Jesus gets injured. But certainly this first 11 is playing very bright, and be interesting to see how they get on against Man United on Sunday.
Absolutely. It was interesting speaking to an Arsenal fan earlier, and he was saying it feels as if the first time in sort of a decade where the full fan base is fully behind that of Arteta and the team. There's been a bit of dismay, hasn't there, at the Emirates in recent times, but a good mood around the place at the moment. We're going to be speaking about Liverpool later. I want a quick word with you on Chelsea, Mark, who lost against Southampton on Tuesday night. They're now odds against for a top four finish, and not going to plan at Stamford Bridge.
Definitely not. It feels a little bit chaotic, really. I mean, Thomas Tuchel keeps on changing the formation, and when it worked, and it worked against Tottenham, didn't it? When he sort of surprised Spurs with Loftus-Cheek popping up in sort of this hybrid role, sometimes a number 10, sometimes a right wing back. But there have been other times when what he's tried just hasn't worked, and I think that was the case at Southampton. They're good for 20 minutes, but really, really poor, I felt, and certainly in the second half when they were chasing the game and he was making substitutions, changing the formation, and he was actually making the team worse, it felt like, with every move. And this is a big, obviously, we're speaking early on transfer deadline day. I think this is a really big day for Chelsea, because definitely need a striker. It looks like a Aubameyang's the one that they want. We can maybe talk about sort of whether he's the right player if he eventually comes. I think they need a central midfielder because N'Golo Kante, when he's fit, really knits that team together well. But he's suffered a lot of injuries over the last couple of years. I don't think you can rely on him. And I'm sure the defence will be better. Once you've got Fofana, Koulibaly, Thiago Silva as that back three, playing regularly, Reece James, Cucurella as the wing backs. I mean, that's a pretty strong back five. I think Mendy's not covered himself in glory at the start of the season, but we know he's a good goalkeeper and sort of, you know, presumably will get back to his best. It's just midfield and forward line just feels a little bit messy to me at the moment. You know, hammered at Leeds as well. So there is plenty to do. And when you are looking at that top four, you know, Arsenal have already got 15 points on the board, which is, we've mentioned earlier, a fantastic start. City and Liverpool surely finishing the top two. Arsenal, like I said, have already made a good start. Tottenham, without playing that well, still unbeaten and have, you know, got a good points tally. So the pressure's really on, Chelsea, I think, to make some moves on transfer deadline day.
Absolutely. One final thing before we move on to our match of the day, Mark. I want a quick word on the relegation scrap down at the bottom. It's interesting, after five games, none of the newly promoted side occupying the bottom three. In 18th, we've got Wolves. 19th, Aston Villa, bottom place at the moment. I know they've played a game less, but it's Leicester. Who are you fearing for most at this stage?
Oh, blimey, even someone in IT, I was in the office yesterday, someone in IT said, "What's happened to your Leicester tip for top half?" I mean, getting dug out by the IT department. I think it's very early days to start. I mean, it's incredible, isn't it, that Bournemouth are not in the bottom, in the bottom three, given some of their performances, and they've already got rid of Scott Parker. I think in terms of who I fear for, I still fear for Everton. I know they were my relegation tip at the start. And so, you know, it's always one of them where you that confirmation bias, they still haven't won. They're pretty well organised. But even with Dominic Calvert-Lewin sort of coming back, I'm not sure that you can rely on him. He's had a lot of injury problems, some stuff off the pitch. It's been a while since he was, you know, somebody that you would sort of, you know, fancy to score a lot of goals. And if they don't find somebody to score their goals, I just see them being this really kind of almost like a new Burnley, really, with their time-wasting tactics, you know, not impressing the Elland Road faithful. They've got a horrible run of fixtures coming up. We're sort of, you know, we're going to speak about that Liverpool game next. So I would fear in parts for them. I think Bournemouth will be relegated. You know, it's going to, Scott Parker left. I'm not sure he was the problem. I'm not sure he was the solution either, but I think that they will go down. I mean, presumably Nottingham Forest will sign another 10 players on transfer deadline day, so hard to know about them. What I would say is that, you know, someone like Leeds have got 8 points from five games, but they've had a really comfortable start. So it wouldn't be a massive surprise if in another 10 games, you know, they didn't really have that many more, you know, added to their tally. So I don't think you can start looking at the league table and thinking, oh, well, Leeds in six, Fulham in seven, Southampton in eight. You know, they're already sort of on the road to safety. It's a long season, and I expect them to sort of slip backwards. I think Wolves will be all right. I know that the goals have been a big problem for them, but look at the way that they're playing and they're dominating matches. And I just tend to think that if you keep sort of playing that way, I saw them at Spurs and they looked a good team to me. So I think they'll be all right. I mean, Aston Villa do look a mess at the moment. I'm not sure I'd fancy them for relegation necessarily, but I'm not entirely sure what Steve, and we spoke about this before we had that sort of little break, but I'm not entirely sure what Steven Gerrard is trying to do there in terms of, you know, you look at somebody like Arsenal, for instance, they've got a very clear identity on how they want to play. And, you know, Gerrard referenced Arteta before that game last night because he said, you know, this time last year, everyone was laughing at Arsenal. But at least with Arteta, he had a way of playing and he was going to sort of live or die by, you know, the players being able to perform that. I'm not quite sure what Aston Villa's kind of tactics are. I don't know if you sort of have worked it out, Jack, but it just seems very confused to me.
It does. Yeah, it seems awfully confused. You've got to fear for Villa, haven't you? We've got a Merseyside derby to preview. Let's get onto that now. It's Everton against Liverpool this game. The early kickoff on Saturday. Everton 7-1, the draw 4-1, Liverpool 4-11. Mark, we've spoken briefly on the concerns around Everton. What have you made of Liverpool's start? It's been far from routine, hasn't it? I mean, they'll surely be buoyed from their last gasp winner against Newcastle. But even in that, they didn't look as convincing as I think we've become used to with Jurgen Klopp's side. Not quite at the races just yet.
No, I mean, obviously the 9-0 against Bournemouth was a spectacular result. But I think there have been enough sort of flat moments and flat spells in this season already to be sort of slightly concerned about them. I think Alexander-Arnold and Robertson maybe not quite up to the levels that we've come to expect of them. And they're so important to the way that Liverpool want to play. If you think about Nunez, he was the one that was brought in to replace Sadio Mane, then gets a free match ban and sent off in that Crystal Palace game. I think if they've got 11 men on the pitch against Crystal Palace, they probably win that one. Points tally doesn't look so bad. If he doesn't get sent off, they have the potential to play differently at Old Trafford. And their season might look quite sort of different already. But I suppose somebody like Mohamed Salah, another one that just hasn't hit absolute top form so far for them this season, you know. And he has missed some sitters. And if you've got Salah not quite at it, Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, maybe a little bit below his best, Robertson the same, the injuries they've had in midfield, you put all that together and maybe that, you know, you've got excuses there for why it's not quite come together just yet. I think that was a really important win against Newcastle. Did leave it very, very late to get the success. But I expect them to, you know, by the end of the season, I still expect them to, be not to win the league. I always had City down as the winners and still do. But I'd still be surprised if they didn't finish second, even though it's not been a great start for them.
It's a funny one with Salah, isn't it? The standards he's set and we've become used to have become so high. He picked up both assists in that game against Newcastle and we're still kind of moaning that he's maybe not scoring as many. He really is a remarkable player.
Yeah, but I think you just can't... You know, Liverpool need everybody to be absolutely at it all the time. You know, that's what's enabled them to get so close and actually overtake City on one occasion. It's sort of Salah not being very good. It's being exceptional. And so that's what they kind of need. And I don't know. I mean, him and Mane didn't have the best of relationships. It didn't look like on the pitch all the time. They had their sort of moments, didn't they, where there was a little bit of selfishness going on. But I do wonder maybe whether that attack without the slickness of Mane just means that maybe teams can look at trying to quieten down Salah maybe more, because if you concentrate too much on Salah, then it'd be Mane that would hurt you and vice versa. And maybe they're just trying to find their way in sort of what this new attack or old attack in some respects, because Firmino's come in and not done badly. But, you know, it's just, I think losing Mane was a big deal, I think, for Liverpool. It's something that they had to do, but it's not overly surprising that they're just finding a little bit of time to work it all out and not helped by the injuries in midfield.
In terms of Everton, yet to win this season and in the next six games will face Liverpool, Arsenal, United and Spurs. It doesn't get any easier for them. What do they need to change to at least get some points on the board?
Well, they need Calvert-Lewin fit. I think Onana has shown little signs, the midfielder, that you know, he can improve them in that area. So there might be some quality to come once he's fully up to speed with the Premier League. I just think they're a very negative team. They were wasting time early on at Leeds, and they just feel like they're trying to almost grind it out. They were grinding it last season, weren't they, when they were trying to stay up? And I don't think they've kind of got out of that grind mode at the moment. You mentioned that tough run of fixtures. If you kind of stretch it out to sort of the next seven, they've also got West Ham and Newcastle. You know, West Ham have been on the fringes of the top six last couple of years. Newcastle probably going to replace them as best of the rest. This time around, I certainly will expect to be kind of, you know, in that seventh position at the very least. So it really is a tough run of games. I'm not sure they can do that much more, though, until Calvert-Lewin's back. And I expect more of the same in this Derby game, really, where they, you know, they're committed. They look for something like Gordon on the break. But, you know, it's probably a case of them trying to frustrate Liverpool and just work off that Goodison crowd that, we know kind of carried them over the line last year in terms of staying up.
It sounds like you think the outcome's only one way in this Derby. Mark, what's the best bet?
Yeah, so I mean, Liverpool have only won two of the last 10 at Goodison in the Premier League. So it's not an easy place for them to visit, but I do expect them to win. I'm going for Liverpool and under 3.5 goals. I just think that it's one of those games really where Everton are going to sit deep. Liverpool will need to retain some patience and eventually their quality can get the job done. But this game is never it's very rarely the prettiest of football matches. So I'm expecting all that blood and thunder, 100 miles an hour, and Liverpool to at some stage find a way past that packed Everton defence. But it won't be easy, I don't think.
Okay, let's whiz through the rest of the Premier League fixtures. Let's start with Brentford Leeds then. Brentford 23-25-2, the draw 23-10 about Leeds. Where are we going here, Mark?
Yeah, I think it's a really hard Premier League coupon, actually. The draw was the one that stood out to me in this one. I mean, Brentford get a lot of plaudits, and rightly so. But if you haven't had a look at their wins, it's only coming in a fresh Manchester United, but that is their only success so far. So I just at the prices, I weren't mad on Brentford. So that's why I went for the draw.
Yeah, it does look like a tricky coupon this week. Chelsea West Ham, we were speaking quite poorly of Chelsea earlier, but they're twos on for this game. 15-4 the draw, 19-4 West Ham. Mark, you would have watched West Ham against your Spurs the other night. What did you make of the Hammers?
I thought that second half they played really quite well. And you saw probably their best 45 minutes of the season. Antonio was back to something like his best, which it's been a long time since we've seen that, but he was really fired up for it. Bowen's a threat on the right. Paquetar, the new sort of Brazilian, was he 60 million, 50 million signing, came on, showed a couple of nice touches. What I was impressed with was the way that he pressed and sort of really put the Tottenham players under pressure. So maybe a start in store for him. Probably not playing to the level that they were West Ham, when they were pushing for top four, weren't they? At one stage, sort of, maybe not last season, the season before. Rice is probably just gone back to more normal levels than when he was playing absolutely out of his skin. But I at 1-2, I think you can easily avoid Chelsea at the prices. I mean, they're just not playing well enough, in my opinion, to back in what should be a fiercely competitive London derby. So I'll go West Ham or draw double chance. I think Chelsea need the window to close. They need to sort their squad out, who's staying, who's going. And then maybe you'll see the best of them in a couple of weeks once everything's quietened down.
Okay, let's move on to preview Newcastle against Crystal Palace. Even money Newcastle, 12-5 the draw, 14-5 Palace. Their new signing, Isaac, looks incredibly bright. Newcastle's striker, Mark.
Yeah. Very positive performance for him at Anfield. I have to say, I was a little bit down on him. I thought it was a lot of money that Newcastle paid for him, but I mean, certainly started very well. I'm going to again go for the draw in this game. I mean, Guimaraes, Wilson and Saint-Maximin all missed out, didn't they, against Liverpool? So I have to wait and see whether they come back for Newcastle. I think Crystal Palace have had a really hard start to the season. They've played City away, they've played Liverpool away, they played Arsenal, which, a game that they would have fancied themselves on the opening day, but 2-0 defeat doesn't look quite so bad now the way that the Gunners have started. But they beat Aston Villa and didn't see it out against Brentford, led for till the last couple of minutes. So I think that the Palace are still a team that are awkward to play against under with Patrick Vieira, and then two very solid centre-backs in there as well. So I think this could be hard work for Newcastle. And again, I just thought of the prices. Didn't massively fancy the Geordie. So just sat on the fence a little bit with a draw.
Okay, next game up. I'm sure some media outlets and probably the fans of either side will be describing this as a six-pointer already. It's Nottingham Forest against Bournemouth, 19-20. Forest 5-2 the draw, 14-5. Bournemouth, we've spoken about Bournemouth already, Mark. So a quick word on Forest, who we know have spent considerable amounts of money. They're chucking everything at trying to survive in the Premier League this season. There's been sparks of goodness from them.
Well, yeah, I mean, mixed in with some bad stuff, obviously. You know,
yeah.
You're always going to lose to, well, I say always, you're likely to lose to Manchester City. You don't want to lose 6-0. I mean, that is still a bit of a drubbing for them. But I think their home performances have given them hope. You know, they beat West Ham. They were on the front foot for large spells against Tottenham. Just against Tottenham, it was the quality in both boxes that was lacking. But there's obviously a big difference between Spurs and Bournemouth. And I think this is much more to Forest's level. And I thought, the prices you read out there, 19-20 Forest, I think there is a little bit of sort of odds against around. If you can get odds against, I think that is fair enough for Nottingham Forest. I think they'll finish comfortably ahead of Bournemouth come the end of the season. And so I'm taking a long-term view that Forest are quite a bit better than Bournemouth, actually. And I take them to win the game. It is a really important one, albeit it's only early September. It feels like a big game.
Yeah, huge for confidence, especially for those fans, isn't it? Tottenham against Fulham. What have you made of your start, Mark, to this season? It feels positive from the outside. Does it feel like that from within?
No, the fans are getting... I'm not one of them that's getting stressed out, but there's quite a lot of Spurs fans stressed with the performances. I don't think that they've played very well in most of the games. You know, I'm pretty calm. I think that, Conte teams are never, ever going to, you know, dominate the ball 75% possession and play like Manchester City. It's all about that effectiveness, like I just mentioned, in both boxes. You know, don't give up many chances and, you know, hit them with the front sort of four with Richarlison, Son, Kulusevski and Kane and, you know, win the games that way. So I'm calm, but I would say there is a restlessness at Spurs just with the way that they're playing at the moment. This is their third game in 6 days as well. They played Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday. So probably had the worst of the fixtures in terms of that point of view. I think it's I think this is a trickier game than it maybe looks on paper. One way to do it was maybe go for Fulham or draw, double chance. But actually, I just thought, I could play a little bit more. It feels a little bit more obvious than that, even though it's quite a bit bigger price. 13-5, Mitrovic to score. I mean, he's got 5-5, nearly 50 goals for club and country last season. I mean, most people, myself included, just had him down as a bit of a Premier League flop. But, you know, what if he's not? I mean, if he hadn't had those bad Premier League years and he'd got 40-odd or whatever it was in the Championship and then comes in with 5-5, everyone would be going, oh my God, he's like a sensational striker. And I like the way that he's playing. This Fulham team is just set up to serve him. And if Fulham score, you feel like it's going to be Mitrovic. So 13-5 for him to score just feels like a better way of maybe trying to sort of get on that belief that Tottenham are not going to have it all their own way in North London on Saturday.
Wolves Southampton then, the last of the 3 o'clock kickoffs we'll be previewing. 6-5 Wolves, 12-5 the draw, 9-4 Southampton. Mark, what's the best bet for this?
Under 2.5 goals. You could almost just put this down for Wolves games, couldn't you? Their matches averaged 2.13 goals in the Premier League last season. Under Bruno Lage, 28 of 43, being under 2.5. That's 65% of games. So you put those numbers against the 4-5 for the unders and it feels quite big. And, you know, Southampton made the most of their opportunities against Chelsea. They're not a team that I trust to back up performances. You know, they've got them in them, but then they maybe have a little dip. So, yeah, it's one of them games really where I just think that, you know, going being against goals in Wolves games is probably never a bad idea.
Let's take a look at the evening fixture on Saturday. Villa against Manchester City, 6-1 Villa, 9-2 the draw, 4-11 Manchester City. Already seeing some Villa fans on Twitter, Mark, fearing the worst here. Do you expect another drubbing?
I do, yeah. The way I was looking to play it, though, it's a bit safe. It's 1-2 or around 1-2. You might be able to chop around. You might be able to get a bit of 8-15. But it's Manchester City -1 on the Asian handicap. So for this bet, if Man City win by one goal, you get your money back. If they win by two or more, your bet's a winner. If they don't win, then you lose. And, you know, I mean, if you want to get with City and they don't win, then, you know, it doesn't matter really how you play it, you're going to lose. So that's why I thought the -1 was the sensible kind of play in this one, albeit it's a short price. But if we look at City, I mean, if you wanted to sort of question some of City's sort of form, if you like, so far, it's all their opponents that they that in looking at the league table now, all of their opponents currently in the bottom half of the table. The thing is, Aston Villa, you know, are probably worse than most of those that they've already played. You know, 3 points from Crystal Palace, Bournemouth, Arsenal, West Ham and Everton. It's just not enough from Villa, given what they've spent, given the expectations on sort of the improvement that was supposed to come with Steven Gerrard in charge. It's just not good enough. And we mentioned it at the top of the show, just in terms of what they're actually trying to do. I'm not sure. Quite narrow. Most games have been quite narrow in central midfield. Tried to get the fullback sort of up the pitch. I think Carlos's injury, the centre half, you know, from Sevilla, was a big one. To lose him so early in the season was, unfortunate. But there was all stuff, wasn't there, before the season started. Dropping Mings from captaincy, then dropping him to the bench, but quickly bringing him back into the team. You know, Coutinho or Buendia, Watkins and or Ings. There's just so many question marks at the moment as to what Villa are trying to do. And I think that's not ideal when you play in Manchester City, because, you need to all be together to stop them. Because if one player, you know, doesn't do what they're supposed to against Manchester City, they usually rip you apart.
Absolutely. Two games on the Sunday. We'll start with the 2 o'clock kickoff. Brighton against Leicester, 5-6 the home side, 5-2 the draw, 7-2 Leicester. Mark, I think if we would have said a month ago that Leicester would be travelling to Brighton and going off 7-2, you'd have probably been surprised.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's an interesting price, I have to say. But we're speaking before their game against Manchester United on Thursday, and I always like to see what happens on that Thursday. It's also transfer deadline day. You know, Leicester need to bring players in after sort of the sale of Fofana. So let's see where they're at. But I still think it's an interesting price. I'm going to go for both teams to score, though, as the best bet for now. There's a lot of negativity around Leicester as well, which is not ideal. But if they beat Manchester United, you know, that can quickly turn around. But what they have done, it's scored in 15 of their last 16 Premier League games as we speak. So they've still got a threat going forward. It's just losing Fofana and then being a bit slow in terms of that sale and then bringing in replacements. Not ideal. So it's really hard to see them keeping a clean sheet against anyone at the moment. With the little asterisks there that we're speaking before Man United, maybe they keep a clean sheet there and it looks different. But, you know, just as we're looking at this game now, I think both teams have scored the bet.
4:30 Sunday, this will be a nice game to watch with your roast dinner. Manchester United against Arsenal, 8-5 United, 5-2 the draw, 31-20 about Arsenal. Really excited for this one, Mark. Which way do you see it going?
Yeah, I mean, this is an exciting game because I think it will tell us about both teams. And, you know, we are waiting to see Arsenal up against a big six team, and for all Man United's problems, I still expect them to finish definitely top six this season. So it will be a test for them. And Arsenal last season away to the big six, they lost their discipline at times. They conceded 17 goals in those five Premier League games. So, you know, let's see how much they've improved. I feel like they are probably, you know, a fair bit better. I still feel, though, United draw no bet as outsiders. It feels to me like an interesting price, certainly interesting enough for me to back Manchester United. you know, Casemiro and Antony are going to make a difference for them. They should do for the amount of money that they've cost. You know, obviously not got any change out of about 150, 160 million for those two. But I think that Ten Hag, slower than he should have done, has realised which players can't and shouldn't be in that team. So I think that United, without being anywhere near kind of, you know, the real top teams in England, have at least found a way of playing and have got dangerous players on the counter-attack. And yeah, I just think as a value bet, outsiders at home, just it feels a little bit big to me.
Excellent. I'm really looking forward to all of the Premier League action this weekend. There's plenty of EFL to get through as well. Let's do that now with Dan Childs. Here we go then. Let's chat all things EFL. Great to be joined by Racing Post Sports, Dan Childs. It's been a thrilling start to the EFL, as always, Dan. Great to have you along once more. Three tips from yourself this week. And the first one starts in the Championship.
Yeah, I'm going to go with QPR away to Swansea. You can get odds against for QPR on the draw no bet, which I think is a really good price. I think out of the two teams, QPR starting, you know, they've had back-to-back wins recently. Had a really good win at Watford, 3-2, where Watford pegged them back twice and they kept going back in front again, QPR, and then back that up with a 3-1 win at home to Hull in midweek. I mean, that's propelled them to sort of the fringes of the playoffs. I think QPR under Michael Beale, who's a highly rated up-and-coming rookie manager, I think they'll be looking to break into them playoffs. And I think they look a stronger side than Swansea, whereas QPR seem to have built in the summer. Swansea seem to be struggling to keep their team together. They lost Flynn Downs, good midfield player, to West Ham earlier in the window. They seem to be struggling to keep hold of Michael Obafemi, who's the subject of a bid by Burnley. I just think that is not right there for Swansea at the moment under Russell Martin. They've only won one of seven games. They've got this really expansive possession-based style. But I think other teams are really cottoning onto that and pressing Swansea high and nicking the ball off them in dangerous areas and punishing them. I mean, Luton went there, Swansea's last home game there, and picked them off really and beat them 2-0. I can see QPR doing something similar. I think they've got better attacking players actually than Luton, with the likes of Elias Chair and Chris Willock, who have started the season really well. The fullbacks have been upgraded in the summer, Kenneth Powell and Ethan Laird, who combined for one of the goals against Hull. I think they go a good side, QPR, and I fancy them at Swansea.
Do you think QPR are probably one of the, outside of the obvious in the Championship, I guess the newly relegated sides, your West Broms, your Sheffield United, do you think QPR are probably the side that could break into that top six?
Yeah, out of the other teams that we've kind of lesser budgets, I would say they're the ones. What I would say is they need to be a bit lucky with injuries. I mean, players like Elias Chair and Willock are so key to them. I mean, Willock is actually a little bit injury prone. I think he's played four out of seven games so far this season, so they need to really look after him. 46 game season, can he play sort of two games a week? But if he can and they keep them key players fit, yeah, every chance of a top six finish.
Okay, exciting times down at Loftus Road. Another Championship tip, Dan, take it away.
Yeah, going to look at Sunday's game now between Sheffield United going to Hull. I fancy Sheffield United to win this one. If I was to say, I mean, the Championships are notoriously sort of up and down division, but the team more than anyone else that have impressed me this season is Sheffield United. They're leading the division at the moment. They started the season, had a lot of injuries when they went to Watford in their opening game and still played okay in that game, lost 1-0, haven't lost since, four wins and two draws. They've got some real, you know, quality players. Sander Berger, who's linked with earlier in the summer with a move away, is a very good attacking midfield player. The defender that they signed, the Bosnian, Anil Ahmed Hodzic, has looked an absolute class act. Gets forward effectively as well. Scored a great goal in their 4-0 win over Reading in midweek. Ilhamane Ndiaye of the forwards, he seems to be improving all the time. Got a lot of pace and gets a goal. I think that generally they also play at an excellent tempo in their matches. Battered Reading, as I mentioned, 4-0. And I think there'll be too much for Hull. Hull had a bright start, got a couple of wins where I thought they were a bit fortunate. The win over Norwich and the win at home to Bristol City, where they benefited from a very dodgy penalty decision. But they seem to be struggling a little bit in more recent games. Got hammered at West Brom, lost 3-1 at QPR in midweek. I think they'll struggle against the league leaders.
Okay, so two from the Championship, and where are we going next, Dan?
Got one in League One. I fancy Cambridge to do the business at home to Lincoln. I mean, League One's a division where lots and lots of big clubs are expected to challenge for those top six positions. I don't think Cambridge are going to be, you know, pushing to get into that top six, but you know, one of the more modest budgets in the division. But at the moment, they are up to seventh. Mark Bonner's doing a fantastic job there. I mean, he'll be keeping his fingers crossed that key players sort of stay beyond the closure of the transfer deadline. I mean, Sam Smith and Joe Ironside are big players for them going forwards. Shiloh Tracy's another one that's been attracting attention, but they're going really, really well. Finished 14th last season, which was excellent for a team of their budget. I think that, you know, they could improve again this season. They're competitive in every game. People, once I say that, will point out the 4-1 loss away to Portsmouth, but that game was actually much closer than the score suggests. Cambridge took the lead and sort of conceded a few late goals in that game, but it wasn't a 4-1 game. Again, playing at home to Lincoln. Lincoln started the season quite well, but they seem to have gone off the ball a bit recently. They've been picking up a few injuries. Lost 4-0 away to Peterborough in their last away game. Last weekend, they drew 2-2 at home to Fleetwood, but they were on the back foot, apparently, for most of that game. They seem to be not playing quite as well as they were in the first few matches. And I think the trip to Cambridge, who at the moment have got 100% home record, I think it's a tough game for them.
Big thanks to Dan. As always, you can read more from him on the Racing Post Sport website, along with a whole host of other brilliant content. Well worth your time visiting there. Mark, let's get your best bets from everywhere, and we'll start with your player prop shop.
Yeah, Tyler Adams of Leeds to be booked in that game. I was going to say Griffin Park. Blimey, that's only going back a couple of years. But away to Brentford. Tyler Adams, all action midfielder. He's already been booked twice since he arrived at Leeds United. And you're looking at him sort of in terms of he's second in the Premier League for tackles. He's third for pressures. He's getting in the faces of opposition midfielders. I'm expecting this to be quite a quick game against a Brentford team that playing a similar way in terms of Haring. So, he's also somebody that caught my eye in the Champions League last year because he was booked in four of his five Champions League appearances. So he's not shy, Tyler Adams, of getting stuck in. So, yeah, him to be carded.
What about a long shot for this week?
MK Dons in League One, 12-5 at Exeter. I mean, Exeter's just recently just fallen away and made a bright start, but they lost to Cheltenham and to Cambridge. Didn't have a shot on target in the game against Accrington. So I just wonder if maybe that kind of that the buzz of promotion now, we're into the mundane of League One. Exeter have just calmed their form and performances down. MK Dons started the season, really badly. I do wonder if there was a bit of a playoff hangover, but two of those three defeats were to Sheffield Wednesday and Ipswich, who are going to be sort of bang up there come the end of the season, no doubt about that. Since then, they've got 7 points from nine, and 12-5 about, a really good team last season against the side that was in League Two, only a couple of months ago. Again, just feels on the big side to me.
Some big prices in the EFL. A treble for this weekend, Mark.
Yeah, so I've already explained the Man City -1 Asian handicap. So we'll go with that against Aston Villa. Barcelona to win at Sevilla. More on that in a minute. Spoiler alert. And then to complete the treble, Sheffield United to win away to Hull. That game's on Sunday in the Championship. Hull are getting pummeled on the shot count most weeks. I suspect that their results might sort of take a turn for the worse, and some of them have been pretty bad recently. Sort of really jumpy team, aren't they? They've been winning games, losing them. But if you look at the shot count, it's gone against them and by a fair distance in most games. Sheffield United started the season really positively and see no reason really why it shouldn't continue.
Okay, the most confident bet of the weekend. What's the nap?
Yeah, so it's Barcelona to win at Sevilla in La Liga. I think it's been an impressive start, performance-wise anyway, from Barcelona. Did draw the opener 0-0, but in terms of the way they dominated that game, I have no sort of issues with it. They were fully on top. Their XG early doors has been absolutely fantastic. They've got eight goals. They look tight at the back. They've already won away by a wide margin to Real Sociedad. Lewandowski's up and running. They've got just got a lot of... You can argue about the way that they put the team together and whether they should be allowed to pull as many levers as they have. But they've pulled the levers and they've got really good players. One of those is at the back, Jules Koundé, who left from Sevilla. And Sevilla lost Koundé and Diego Carlos was their centre-backs from last season. And, you know, Monchi, the sporting director, always needs to produce magic in the transfer market because they lose their best players, have to look for some replacements. I'm not sure if they've done it as well this year as what they have done maybe previously. So I'm expecting a bit of regression in Seville, and Barcelona, I think, are a team on the up.
Excellent. A nice portfolio of bets for this weekend. Hope you've jotted them down. The Champions League is just around the corner. Let's get Mark's thoughts on that now. Yeah, it's nearly time for the Champions League to return. Let me give you a quick spin through the top of the market where Manchester City are your 5-2 favourites. It's then PSG 5-1, Liverpool 11-2, Bayern Munich 13-2, Real Madrid 9-1, and then the duo of the English teams 14-1, Tottenham 16-1, Chelsea bigger the rest. Mark, excited for this as always. Do you think Manchester City justify favouritism?
I do. I had to sort of by mentioning it twice. No, by doing it twice, I was almost trying to convince myself, maybe. But you know, when Paul Merson sort of says that, you know, I like him, I really like him. I've sort of done one of those, haven't I? I think that we draw too many conclusions from their past failures. I just don't think that there is a fundamental problem with Manchester City and the Champions League. I just think that we look for that and sort of, you know, once they've lost a game, we then look to put that into some kind of narrative that I'm not sure is there. Last season when they lost to Real Madrid, I don't think they lost that game because it was Champions League. I mean, and, you know, they've got this big fear factor. They just had a bad minute, a bad 2 minutes. It can happen to teams, happens to sort of all teams at some stages. And to me, that it just feels like a weak argument to just say, oh, well, they can't win the Champions League and all of these things. They've got the best team. It doesn't mean that they will win it. Of course it doesn't. But I think it means they deserve to be favourites. If you're the best team and you've just added Erling Haaland to the ranks, then I think that that makes you the most likely winners. And then you also look at the draw. I don't think it's been particularly tough. And it rarely is to City. They do seem to get some nice draws in the Champions League. Sevilla, Borussia Dortmund, Copenhagen. I think they'll top that group pretty comfortably. And then when you get to the latter stages, maybe something will go wrong again and it'll be fraudiola and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, when Jack Grealish, I mean, that game against Real Madrid, you know, Courtois made some great saves and they so very nearly got the goal that would have absolutely killed the tie off. One mad minute doesn't make me sort of disbelieve in Man City. I think that the Premier League remains, you know, the strongest in Europe. They're the best team in the Premier League. They're the best team in Europe. And they will be the team that everybody's got to beat.
How do you rate the other British challenges? You've got Liverpool, Chelsea, Spurs, Rangers and Celtic thrown in there as well. I guess the obvious call would be Liverpool to do the best out of those lot. But do you you give the others a fair chance?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree that I think Liverpool, you know, will be kind of best of the rest in terms of the British teams. Jurgen Klopp's got a very good record in this competition. Liverpool, as I just mentioned, if the Premier League's the best in Europe and Liverpool have pushed City so close, it means that they're, you know, absolutely a top team. I do wonder whether you can just keep getting to finals. I mean, they've had so many great runs that you do wonder whether it's difficult to get to a Champions League final, never mind two in a row. And that would be my concern. I don't really have much concern over the group. I think Ajax have lost some really important players. Napoli, not bad. Rangers, we might as well get onto them now. I mean, I think just without being too condescending, just being in the Champions League is the biggest sort of point for them. And they'll probably be looking at trying to sort of sneak third and get into the Europa. I mean, there's a form line there with Rangers and sort of the PSV because they beat them. So Ajax could be sort of one that they look to target. But I think ultimately they probably will finish fourth in that group. And in terms of Celtic, I think that they've obviously got absolutely cracking draw in terms of playing Real Madrid. I think they might fancy their chances of finishing in third spot at least, because Shakhtar have lost a lot of players. Obviously due to the war in Ukraine, that they relied a lot on foreign players that have mainly departed. So maybe there's an opportunity there for them to extend their season. Chelsea, I just think, a really difficult team to weigh up. I know I've said that about three times already on the pod today, but without knowing what they've done today, I think it's really difficult to judge where they're going to be at. I think the group's quite nice. Milan, Red Bull Salzburg and Dynamo Zagreb. I'd expect Chelsea to win that group. And they are the kind of team, that defend well, got the pace on the counter-attack. I think that works well in Champions League. So maybe there's an opportunity in terms of like the value from the sort of teams from the Premier League. Maybe Chelsea could sort of outperform their odds if they sort themselves out on transfer deadline day. But I don't hold out huge hope that they do. In terms of Tottenham, I mean, their price has come in a lot, hasn't it, since they drew Eintracht Frankfurt, Sporting and Marseille. I think it's a kind draw. I don't think it's quite as easy as what people were suggesting. Conte's got a poor record in the Champions League because he's not a great rotator. I expect Tottenham to get through, but then, I would say quarterfinals feels like about their limit at the moment. So without being sort of too boring, I think that Man City are probably going to do best of the British Raiders.
Okay, let's look elsewhere. And PSG, I guess, are the shortest price out of the non-British sides. Let's start, though, with holders Real Madrid, who'll be going off at about 9-1 for this year's tournament. Any chance that they defend?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the price there will interest some people because it's quite a good draw, Leipzig, Shakhtar and Celtic. And they've lost Casemiro, but I think Tuameni is a fantastic replacement for him. You expect Camavinga to come on again and sort of start to jostle for position in terms of that Modric and Kroos midfield. Rudiger's sort of been brought into the squad defensively. So I think he was a good player for Chelsea. So it adds numbers there. Vinicius is getting better and better all the time. It was just they did have a lot of luck last year. And so you just wonder if you can sort of get that luck 2 years running. I don't think you can completely rule them out just because of the way that they kind of won it last year. But I'd be surprised if you could do that 2 years running.
How about PSG, who it feels as if we're in the Manchester City bracket. People always think they're going to maybe go on to win it, but never quite manage it.
Yeah, the only thing I don't like about Paris Saint-Germain is the price. I thought that you'd be, if you kind of look at the bookmaking and sort of the betting fraternity in terms of the odds and kind of the general public view of PSG, they're completely different. You've got this sort of general public view of PSG being really soft, won't be going anywhere near winning the Champions League. And then you've got the odds that actually say that, if Man City don't win it, they're next best. And I tend to agree, actually, that Paris are right up there. I just wish that they were a slightly bigger price. I mean, that Christophe Gaultier, the new coach, he's definitely bringing the team and the squad together, which has been the big issue there. And you look at the team, Donnarumma in goal, Neymar and Mbappe, Messi up front. They've actually, Fabian Ruiz, I think, is a fantastic midfielder. They've kind of bought sensibly in midfield. Renato Sanchez, Fabian Ruiz. There's an idea and a kind of philosophy now, rather than just trying to buy any old random player. They've moved to a back three, which means they can get Sergio Ramos in there, Hakimi as one wing back, Nuno Mendes as the other wing back. They've got a really good team. I think it's a nice draw. Juve not as strong as they were sort of 5 years ago. Benfica, Maccabi Haifa, shouldn't be any problems there. I'm definitely not ruling out Paris Saint-Germain.
Any other notable mentions?
Well, I mean, we should probably mention Bayern Munich, just in as much as I don't massively fancy them. Julian Nagelsmann, such an attacking coach. I just think that they're too attacking, and that they'll get picked apart when they come up against sort of the real big teams. At a bigger price, I would say Barcelona would be ones to definitely keep an eye on. They're in the same group as Bayern Munich, of course, and it's with Inter. Victoria Pilsen have sort of drawn the short straw, or maybe the best straw, in that if you're not going to, you know, you're not going to win the Champions League, go to Munich, Barcelona and Milan as your three destinations. But that Barcelona team, you know, Pedri and Gavi and Busquets in midfield, Frankie de Jong in midfield, you've got Rafinha, Dembele, Ansu Fati in wide positions. You've got Robert Lewandowski up front. Koundé's come in at the back with Christensen. Ter Stegen's a good goalkeeper. Look, if you back Barcelona, you've got to accept they might go out in the group stage because it's so tough with Bayern and Inter. But I think that maybe we're sleeping a little bit on Barcelona.
Okay, there we go. Are you happy with that roundup for the Champions League, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we'll get back to Twitter questions next week, but we just felt like we really should tackle the Champions League before it started.
You can breathe now. I feel like you were really getting through that at pace. I love that.
Well, you know, if we let the listeners in behind the curtain, there was a knock on the door and a delivery during parts of that. I had to run down the stairs and run back up again, and I'm slightly out of breath.
Great stuff. Thank you so much for tuning in to Bets Club once more. We really appreciated you asking where we've been over the last couple of weeks. We'll be back again next week for another episode. As always, Mark's put up a lot of selections within this podcast. Only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. From Mark and myself, thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you again next week. Bye-bye.